Okay, good. Got it. You guys can see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, so we'll record it for those who aren't able to join. And then, look, as it seems like we're turning a corner here, so hopefully when we resume after the summer, we'll be able to meet the old-fashioned way back in person.
Okay.
But well, let's start with the Gemara here. It's one of the Gemaras that's famous that we read it. We learn about it on the night of Tisha B'Av. And it has a lot to do with Kavod HaBrios, which is tonight's topic, showing respect. Respect for human beings, for personal dignity, and how that matters, the importance of not embarrassing people. So again, if any terms or anything is unclear, feel free to ask. But you have the source here. It says like this. It's telling a story. It says, Akamtu bar kamtu, chorv Yerushalayim. That Yerushalayim was destroyed because of a story. One person's name was Kamtu, another person's name was Bar Kamtu. Hahu gavra, there was one man, derachme kamtu, ubal devolve bar kamtu. He had a friend whose name was Kamsa, and his enemy was named Bar Kamsa. Abed Sudos. He made a large feast. Amalei l'shamay. He said to his servant, Zil Asili Kamsa, go bring my friend Kamsa. The guy got mixed up and said, Ozo Asile Bar Kamsa. He brought his enemy, Bar Kamsa, by the name. So, Ozva Ashkechei Dahavi Yosef. So, the guy who's hosting the feast comes and sees Bar Kamsa sitting there. Amalei michtia hu gavra bal devava da hu gavra who my boy socha, like he's speaking about himself in third person, that man, meaning you're an enemy of that man, of me, so why are you here? Get up, get out, kumpo, go away. So Amalei, so Bar Kamsa says, look, I'm already here, just let me stay, I won't be embarrassed. Vehev nalach, and I'll give you dmei mada achilna vishasena. I'm going to pay you what I've eating from the food. I just please don't send me out. So the Gemara continues there on the says, Amalei lo, no. So he says, Amalei yehev nalach dmei palgas sudasech. I'll pay for half of the wedding. I'll pay for half of this huge feast. Please don't embarrass me. Amalei lo. So he says, no, you have to leave. I'll pay for the entire meal. Wow, that's a tremendous, generous offer. He says, no, you have to leave. He grabbed him by his hand. He literally stood him up and he took him outside. So now that this guy Bar Kamsa got thrown out, the rabbis were there, and they didn't protest the actions of this host, but they saw how he humiliated me. They saw how embarrassing it was in front of everybody. Now again, maybe they didn't see how he'd offered to pay for the whole wedding, but they saw how he's embarrassed. So he said like this, Shma minei konochi nochilu. It must be that they have no problem with that. They're content with what he did. Izel echubilhu kurtza beimalka. I'm going to inform against them to the king. Also, Amalei leKesar, he went and said to the Caesar, Mardu Boch Yehudoi, the Jews are rebelling against you. So Amalei meYemar, how do you know? Who says? So Amalei shadalehu kurbana, send a korban, an offering in honor of the government. Chazis, then you'll see, imakravinle, if they're going to bring this korban or not. Also, shadal biyade egla tilsa. So he went and sent a fancy, choice 3-year-old calf. And then while Bar Kamsa was bringing it to the base of Migdash, he made a blemish in the cow's upper lip. But Amrilay, and some say bedukin shva'ayin, it was in the eye. Duchta dilidan havimuma ledidhu lo havimuma, a place where according to us, the halacha, the Jews would say it is a blemish, but according to them, the non-Jews, for their types of sacrifices, it's not a blemish. So the commentaries, the Gerev points out it's significant that he made a blemish in the lip or one in the eye, which hints to the problem of that generation was with the lips, perhaps, with the way they were speaking about each other, and with the eye, the way that they were not looking at each other. Okay. Sovar Rabban la Kurve Mishum Shal Malka. So the rabbi, Malchus, the rabbis thought, look, we don't want to create any problems here. Let's bring in the korban anyway. Amar hu Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulus. So Avkulus said, Yomer Bali Mumen Kraven Legab Mizbeach. People get the wrong impression, think, oh, you can bring a blemished animal on the Mizbeach. So Sovar la Mikdalei. So they thought, okay, so now we should kill this person, so he's not going to go speak. Lo ozlo meymar. Omle Rabbi Zechariah, yomru matil mum bekodshim yeharig. No, because people say that if you make a blemish on the animal, then you're going to do it. So they didn't do anything. right? So they believe what when Bar Kamsa comes and says, look, the Jews are rebelling against you, and that's when the war began. Omer Rabbi Yochanan.
Avnusa shel Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulus hechrivu es beisenu, v'sarfu es hechalenu, v'higlezu mi artsenu.
Because of this excessive humility, it caused our temple to be destroyed. It burned our sanctuary, and we were exiled from our land. Okay, and then Mark continues and talks about how the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and then skipping to Nun Zion. The Gemara just concludes this whole story and says that all these things that happened.
Tanya, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Bo Ure, come and see Kama Gedola Kocha Shel Busha.
Come and see how powerful is the power of when you shame somebody.
Shehari Siya Kodesh Baruch Hu as Bar Kamsa. Hashem helped this person Bar Kamsa who, you know, he was humiliated. And because of his humiliation, because of his shame, because of his embarrassment, Hechriv es Beisenu v'sarf es Chaleinu,
that our Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. So you think, wow, what's so bad about embarrassing somebody? Well, the Gemara tells us something. On the night where we commemorate the destruction of our Beis Hamikdash, we see the event that caused all these things, you know, that set a thing about was because a person was embarrassed and humiliated in public and nobody did anything about it. So with that, I want to share with you a true story. Rabbi Shai Schachter sent me a source sheet a few years ago, which has the following story. So let me ask you, Amy, what is, by the letter of the law, you can unmute, what is the basic letter, what do you need, according to Jewish law, to be married? What has to happen?
It's okay if you don't know, Amy. I don't know.
You don't know. All right, so you're going to be shocked. I'm going to tell you like this. It doesn't matter the wedding hall. It doesn't matter the dress she's wearing. It doesn't matter the flowers. It doesn't matter the bar. It doesn't matter the orchestra. One thing, it has to be two kosher witnesses, and he has to own the ring that he gives to the girl. That's it. Everything else is nice, important, but if you don't have that, you're not married. If you don't have the ring belonging to him in front of two kosher witnesses, you're not married. Okay. So now, this story happened in Lakewood. I'll tell you before I read maybe I'll just say it to the outside without reading the source. But the following happened on a Thursday night wedding. There was a chosen, and he was a little bit nervous that he was going to forget where he put the ring. So he asked his married sister, do me a favor, hold on to my wedding ring for me. And then when I get underneath the chuppah, I want you to give it back to me and then I'll use that ring. But that way, like one less thing on my mind I have to worry about. So the married sister agrees, fine, no problem. So then it's a Thursday night wedding. He's, you know, you can imagine the scene. It's so exciting. And he turns to his sister and says, please give me the ring. So she mistakenly didn't hand the ring that was her brother's. Guess what? She handed her own wedding ring to her brother. So, you think, okay, big deal, who cares? The answer is, it's a big, big deal because he now used a ring that didn't belong to him. And because the ring did not belong to him, they're not really married. Do you follow that?
Wow.
She gave the wrong ring.
Does that only apply to the bride?
What's that?
Does that only apply to the bride?
Well, the couple, I mean, the husband and wife are not married according to halacha because he did not own the ring that he used at the wedding ceremony.
Right, but does the groom have to get a ring?
No. He just gives the ring to her. It has to have monetary value. The minhag is to use a ring, but in the Syrian community, they use a kaspa, a silver coin. It's okay, but he has to give it to her, and he says the words, Hareat Mekudesh Esli.
I think what Amy's saying is if the bride gives the groom a ring, does she have to own it?
Well, that's what I'm trying to point out. A bride doesn't have to give the ring. That's according to halacha, that's not a valid, it's not a meaningful transaction in the sense that it would create a wedding, a halachic wedding. It might be nice, you want to do it privately later on, but I'm saying in terms of the actual wedding to create a status of being a married woman, he has to give the ring to her with the witnesses that he owns. That's a question that the rabbi who's officiating will ask, do you own this ring? And he'll say, yes, fine. But watch this. The wedding happened on Thursday. They had the whole wedding continued. Everyone goes home. Friday night, Shabbos, there having a big sheva brachas, a big wedding party, and all the guests are invited, and it comes time to wash the hands for Hamotzi, and that's when the sister says, uh-oh, oops, I gave the wrong ring. So now it's Shabbos. You can't call the rabbi. No one's got a phone on them. Nothing. They went, and again, there's an expression like a Monday morning quarterback, right? To go through all the games that played on a Sunday and say, oh, they did this one wrong, this was an interception, they would have fumbled to call this play. It's always easy after the fact, and I'm happy I wasn't in that rabbi's position to make the call, but ouch, he made the wrong call. The rabbi said, the couple is not married. You have to send everybody home. Ow, what an embarrassment. What an embarrassment. So that's what they did. And then after it was over with, they asked Rav Asher Weiss. And again, I won't read the whole three paragraphs you have here in front of you, but this is in Tshuvas Minchas Asher Chelik Beis Simen Pei. He writes, you should have just pulled two witnesses aside privately and done the wedding ceremony again, even on Shabbos. And in a nutshell, his reasoning is, we don't do weddings on Shabbos as a rabbinic restriction. On a Torah level, you're allowed to. You're allowed to get married on Shabbos. The rabbis, because it resembles a business transaction, or people doing business on Shabbos, so they made a fence, a restriction, a safeguard. Don't do wedding ceremonies on Shabbos. But on a Torah level, really, one could. So comes along Rav Asher Weiss and says, we have two conflicting halachic values over here. Again, tonight's topic is kavod habrios, respect for people. And can you imagine how embarrassed this bride and groom, can you imagine how embarrassed the sister was? So in order to preserve their human dignity, the kavod habrios, he said, do a wedding ceremony, get two people, explain to them, two people have to know what happened, and you'll give the ring privately on Shabbos, and they'll get married. Okay, there's a Ramah that's based upon, but we see an important idea that comes out from this, that sometimes when there's a conflict for a rabbinic law, rabbinic laws are pushed aside because this other halachic concern of kavod habrios, of not embarrassing, of not humiliating somebody. Now, if we're doing a Torah law cannot be pushed aside, as I'll show you in some more sources coming up, but that's a fascinating real-life case that happened a few years ago in Lakewood, and it was an incorrect ruling that was given, but now in hindsight, we can look back and see what should have been done, but then a tremendous idea emerges from this, the importance of knowing when. Again, it's not saying to break the halacha. We're pointing out there's just a conflict between halachic values. There's the one value of the respect and human dignity and kavod habrios, and there's the other iser derabbanan of performing the wedding, but we see in the hierarchy of this that kavod habrios is on a higher level. In the next source here is the Gemara in Sota on Yud Amid Beis, a famous story with Yehuda and Tamar. And Yehuda has two sons that marry this woman Tamar, and they both die. And he says, don't worry, I have a third son. Wait till he grows older, and then you'll get married to him. And Tamar sits and waits and realizes that Yehuda's not giving her his third son. So she does something, and again, if this was a Chumash class, we'd spend a lot of time analyzing it. She dresses up like a prostitute, and she entices Yehuda to sleep with her, which he does. And she becomes pregnant. And then about 3 months later, when the pregnancy starts to become apparent, people start talking, and she's sentenced to be taken out to be burned. And at the last moment, she doesn't say, oh, by the way, guess who I'm pregnant from? She's quiet, and she says, please, let the person who I'm pregnant acknowledge it. But she doesn't say who it is. So from this, we see right underlined, in the second source, the Gemara says, Noach lo l'adam, she'apil atzma toch kibshana esh. It would be better for a person to throw themselves into a fiery furnace rather than embarrass somebody else in public. Minolam, what do we know? How do we know this from? Mi Tamar. From the story about Tamar, where she was willing to throw herself into a fiery furnace, give up her life, rather than embarrass somebody. So Tosos asks him a question. Tosos comes along and says, one second. We know there are three sins that you have to give up your life for. You have to give up your life rather than worship an idol, rather than commit adultery, rather than kill somebody. So says Tosafot, what do you mean? Maybe there's a fourth one over here. Maybe not embarrassing somebody. You also have to give up your life for now. Look at the seriousness. Look at the important halachic value that we have not to embarrass somebody. So, you know, Tosafot points out that embarrassing somebody in public is not written explicitly in the Torah, but it's definitely in the same category. So we see the seriousness of how important we have to be, so careful and concerned not to ever embarrass somebody. Sometimes it happens accidentally, but we have to realize how serious this is. Any questions so far? We're good? Okay, let me go through a few more sources. This is the beginning of Sefer Devarim. And this is a speech that Moshe Rabbeinu gave at the end of his life, and he knows that this is the last time he's going to have a chance to talk to the Jewish people before he passes away. And he has to, as a responsible leader, point out to them all the things that they had done wrong, so these mistakes and these sins won't repeat themselves in the future. But instead of actually saying what the sins are, Moshe Rabbeinu hints at them. He alludes to the location where these things happened. Right, he doesn't say exactly where it was. Eiv HaYarden, Chatzeros, V'dizohav. So why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu mention, you know, in Parshas Korach, this week's Parsha, you have the sin of the rebellion of Korach. In last week's Parsha, Parshas Shlach, you had the Meraglim. In Kisiso, you had the Cheta Egel. So here in Devarim, Moshe doesn't say what they are. He just mentions the locations. I had a wonderful teacher, Rabbi Oretz, Olav Shalom. So he would very dramatically learn this Rashi with us, and he would explain, you know, sometimes you just mentioning the name itself of the place, you know, is enough to cause a person to make that association. Like you tell a kid in camp, hey, remember what happened behind the canteen? Like, oh my God, I can't believe it, right? You just remember the location, all of a sudden they understand what happened. So says Rashi, these are all places where the Jewish people sinned and got Hashem angry. He's kuren beremez, but nevertheless, Moshe only said them with a remez, with a hint. Why? Because mipnei kvodon shel Yisroel, where it's bolded here on the sheet, because of this, you know, respect for the Jewish people, even though they were deserving of it. And Rabbi Shai Schachter gave a parallel, or I guess a continuation of this thought, that we know of the story coming up with Bilam and his donkey, that the donkey embarrassed Bilam and, you know, humiliated him in front of his friends, and the sentence was that donkey had to be killed. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz pointed out, why would you kill a donkey like this? Could you imagine the Kiddush Hashem? They could have been creative. People would have made like a parade to see, this is the donkey that embarrassed. See what happens when you start up with the Jewish people, right? Think, you know, nowadays, like all these enemies of the Jewish people on the far right and the far left, they say, wow, look what happens. Don't dare mess with the Jews. Look at this donkey. This donkey of Bilam was proof for what happened, right? A powerful, powerful story. But nevertheless, says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, look at how the Torah had compassion even on an enemy of the Jewish people, not to embarrass him. And you think, well, maybe we should embarrass him. But again, the Torah puts such a stress, a dagesh on this idea about kavod habrios, about human, you know, sensitivity towards them. So let me show you now in the Shulchan Aruch. This is in Siman Shin Gimel Aleph. We know that there are forbidden mixtures. Wool and linen is not allowed to be checked. I don't know if you can see on Zoom, if I have my little tag in here from the Shatnez factory, right? You have to get your suits checked. And they'll say, okay, there's no shatnez in Jaffe's suit. Okay, good. So now I'm allowed to wear it. By the way,
can you just explain what shatnez is a little bit?
Yeah, so shatnez is a forbidden fabrics that can't be mixed together, like wool and linen. You can't wear a jacket or pants or clothing. You can't wear it if it has wool and linen mixed in. So if you're trying on a suit in the store, that's fine, because you want to see if it's going to fit. But once you're actually buying the suit and you want to wear it for real, like outside, then you have to take it to a place where they'll check for you. And there's people who are trained how to look for this. Now, there's different levels. Sometimes the shatnez is prohibited on a Torah level, And other times it's only prohibited on a rabbinic level. So let's take, for example, the following case. A person who's wearing shatnez, this forbidden mixture, which is prohibited on a Torah level. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Haro kilim shel chavero, shel Torah al chavero, afilu hay mahalich b'shu koyfei tekoro ma'av miyan. So if a person is wearing this, you know, jacket, and they didn't realize it, so then, if it's a Torah level, they have to take it off. They have to take it off right then and there. What do you mean? That's so embarrassing. I have to go rock walking my undershirt. I took off my jacket. I have to take off my pants. It's really embarrassing to walk around without any clothing on. But the answer is, you're right. But there's a conflict in values here. There's kavod abrios, the embarrassment factor, but there's also a Torah prohibition. So when we're making our whole hierarchy, if it's a Torah prohibition, that's more important than kavod abrios. So yes, unfortunately, the person's going to be embarrassed, but they still have to take off their shirt. However, afilu im hayarabo, im hayakilim shall divrehim. If you see in the green where it's underlined, if it's rabbinic level, einakurum alav ela poshto b'shuk ad shegir beso. So if it's a rabbinic level prohibition, in that case, we tell the person that they can go home. Go home, and then when you're home and you're in a private place, then you take off the shirt, you put on another one, so you won't have to be embarrassed in public. But so as we have like a sandwich over here, you have a Torah level prohibition, which is the highest. In between that is kavod habrios, and then beneath that is a rabbinic restriction that applies. I'll give you another example. This happened this year. Somebody was getting a haircut during the Sfiras HaOmer, and they didn't do such a good job. Apparently, I don't know. Maybe it was always like home versus mommy. Mom gave the haircut. I forget what the details were, but basically the kid had like half a head, half his hair was cut, the other half was not cut. Now it was, and then it became the period of time when the minhag is not to get haircuts. So when you think about this conflict in halachic values, so it was a pretty easy call to make. A minhag is not on the level of a deraisa. It's not on the level of a derabana. It's lower than that. So if the conflict is kavod abrias, the person's going to be embarrassed like that. There's a yushalmi like this about getting a haircut during a velus. The person was an onei and they found out. Oops, did we lose the Zoom? Uh-oh.
We're good.
You good? Okay, you can still hear me?
I'm just going to remind you, Rabbi Jaffe, to translate Hebrew words, please.
Sure. What should I go by? I apologize. What did I...
We're saying the minhag and the ha.
Oh, the custom. Okay, so right. So the custom of not getting a haircut, then that is on a lower level than the requirement of not embarrassing somebody. So we allowed this boy's mother, whoever it was, I forgot already, to finish giving up a haircut during the period of time of Sfiras HaOmer. So here, I'm a, another true story where there was a conflict between this. I'll read you the thing about making a bracha in order to avoid embarrassment. Right? A bracha means a blessing. So there was once a woman who had an abortion previous to getting married, and she didn't tell her husband. Now again, whether that's right or wrong, I'll let the psychiatrist and the marriage therapist discuss that. But she didn't. So now we got to play the hand we're dealt. Then she was religious. Again, she was not always religious. She was in college, whatever it was, and slept around, had an abortion, but now she's religious. So she meets a husband who's also religious, and they have a baby boy. Now, he doesn't know about his wife's history. See, he thinks that there's an obligation to perform a pidyon haben, which is a special mitzvah that you do to a firstborn child. But this wasn't her firstborn child because she had the abortion. So if she told him the truth about her past relationship and her abortion, it would destroy their harmony, the shalom bayis, the peace in the house. So does she have to tell him? Does she have to tell him everything? Or can they have the pinyon haben, even now the father is going to make a blessing in vain, a bracha levatola? So a fascinating, fascinating question that was presented to Chacham Avad Yosef Zatzal. He was the former chief rabbi of Israel, and he ruled... Get this, he ruled that she doesn't have to say anything, and the husband can go ahead and have a pidyon haben where he's going to make a bracha, even though it's going to be a bracha levatola. So where does that come from? How could you do this? So really, there are three major factors that he used, but again, before I get into the analysis as to why he said what it is, I just think it's important a value to realize is that the halacha places a tremendous significance on not embarrassing people. And he went so far as even to allow this bracha levatola because, okay, maybe shalom bayis was a key factor as well, but this idea of kavod habrios, that not to be embarrassed. So I'll scroll down a little bit more. See? What were the factors which Chacham Vadi Yosef relied upon? So according to many opinions, making a blessing in vain is a rabbinic restriction, right? Okay, maybe it's a machlokis between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. The husband thinks he's reciting a bracha correctly. So perhaps it's not a Torah prohibition, a violation, even according to the Rambam. And to avoid embarrassing someone, it's permitted to allow a rabbinic prohibition, which is what we saw earlier in the Shulchan Aruch. So that's one factor that Chacham Avad Yosef relied upon. Number two, even if saying a blessing in vain, Brach Latal, is a Torah prohibition, the husband's violating it unintentionally. And according to the Rosh, the Rabbeinu Asher, major Torah commentary in the Middle Ages, to avoid embarrassment, you don't have to tell him. So then, perhaps we could rely upon the Rosh in this extenuating circumstances. And the third thing was, there's a comment called the Stechem, and he writes, the Kavod HaBrios, this idea of human dignity, avows for violating a Torah prohibition passively, right, if it's not explicit. And the Brach Latal is not explicitly written in the Torah. So among these three reasons, this is why he allowed the woman to not tell her husband about her past, and he went ahead and they did the Pinyan HaBen. Not everybody agrees this. Do not walk away thinking that this was, yeah, it was accepted. I'm just showing you one opinion that's there. The source is Yabia Omer in the 8th volume, the 32nd response in that. But Rav Liashev Zatzal disagreed. He did not think that one would have permission to make a bracha in this case, and felt that he should share. But what again, from these sources, the idea that emerges, the tremendous sensitivity that we have to have towards others, and even when they're doing things inappropriate, we might think, hey, that guy is doing something wrong, she's doing something wrong, of course I have to tell them off, of course I have to embarrass them. Well, no, we see from Moshe that even when the Jewish people were doing things that were wrong, and they needed to be informed about that, it was done with dignity. And I think that's just important rule for relationships, interpersonally. Even when you have to criticize somebody, whether it's a spouse or a child or a student, it has to be done in a place, coming from a place of care and concern. And it has to be done with respect for the person. The Tosher Rebbe told me that you should imagine when you're talking to a child, imagine they're like a 60-year-old with all their grandchildren. Don't see that kid, a little 9-year-old, in front of you. Imagine that 9-year-old as a 60-year-old bubby, and she's got all of her grandchildren sitting around her. How would you speak to her then? Speak to her the same way when she's a bubby. Speak to her right now as a 9-year-old. And I think that's important, the idea of Kavod HaBrios. It doesn't mean you can't say anything, and many times when it's appropriate. In fact, to not say something would be inappropriate. I remember there was two female faculty teachers that were having a discussion about dress code. And one of them was very strong, says the girls need to be told that they're not dressing appropriately. And another faculty responded, well, I don't want to ruin the relationship. I don't want to say anything because that's going to ruin the relationship. But she said, what's the value of having relationships if you can't say something to the kid? Made a lot of sense. The whole point in having relationships, you can say something to the kid. Now, but how you say it has to be done with respect. So we're not saying not to say anything, but value that relationship and think about it and take so many lessons from this. Again, just as a quick recap, we saw that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because somebody was humiliated and publicly. And that's a terrible thing. We saw that a person should be willing to throw himself into a fiery furnace rather than have to embarrass somebody in public. We saw that when Moshe had to, and it was important, it was required upon him, his responsibilities was to point everything wrong, he still did so with respect for the Jewish people. And even when someone, a Rosh HaMerusha, an evil person like Bilam, when he deserved to be embarrassed through his donkey, the Torah took compassion upon him as well and had that donkey killed so that people couldn't go around and say, oh, this is the animal that his downfall led to. And then we showed a few halakhic examples, whereas there's Torah laws, there are rabbinic laws. But for Kavod HaBrios, this idea about human dignity, that we can suspend rabbinic laws, and that's why if a wedding has to be done on Shabbos in order to preserve the dignity of the chassan, the kala, the sister, and everybody, we would do that. And also we saw in terms of an extreme case of making a bracha, as not to ruin this couple's shalom bayis, that was also permitted according to Chacham Avad Yosef. So, again, I want to thank you. I understand some of my conflicts and couldn't make it. We did record this year, so I'll send it out to Ricky so you can send it to all the chevra. But I want to, you know, Thank you for, I've enjoyed every year I enjoy doing this series with you guys. And hopefully when, you know, we resume in the fall, we'll be able to do the, you know, back in person and get to see everybody face to face the way we're meant to learn from each other.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay.